Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Coming up on Studios America, Pat Gray swings through the studio. I'd like to say that we have some deep, insightful political analysis for you, but I think we're just going to talk about cookies. Anyway, speaking of fat things, we'll talk to you about Stu Eats America. It's my brand new segment. You're going to love it. It was originally just going to be me, basically, but Jeffy smelled the food from next door and wandered over to help out, so he'll join us as well. Thank you for tuning in tonight. Are you following me on Instagram yet? I would appreciate it if you do. Head to my page, at Stu Does America now, and help me get more followers than my wife. This is obviously incredibly important to all of us. And if you click the link in the bio, you'll get access to all of our episodes completely free on your favorite platforms. It's difficult to decide what to be angry about when everyone is always angry about everything. But when did we as a nation decide together to have such thin skin? Let's do the culture of victimization.
Stu Does America.
We've changed as a country. We've changed from the people, the greatest country on earth, that was really the feeling of this country, to a country that's constantly looking to be the victim. There was a time in which achievement was what we strived to be, and now it seems to be you want to be oppressed so that you can argue to everyone that you're oppressed. So you can say that you are the vulnerable, oppressed people. The ultimate example of this, and I've brought this up a couple of times, is that even our white supremacists are whining about being victims now. At one point, I mean, they were white supremacists. They thought they were supreme, right? Now, it's white genocide, right? It's like they are constantly at the victims of all of these terrible things. They just can't make it happen. These poor white supremacists sadly are now victims too. Everyone's a victim all the time. And I don't understand it. And I feel like a large part of this is our search to become the victim. It's looking for a way to justify that you've had terrible things happening to you because that proves your worth in some way. I was listening to a podcast from Axios the other day, and there's a discussion about AAPI hate. That's Asian American Pacific Islanders for all you disgusting people who didn't know what that term meant like everyone else in the world 2 weeks ago. So AAPI hate has been a big thing. We've talked about it a few times. What's the actual truth behind it? I wanted to listen, though, to a podcast from Axios talking about a new survey discussing about how widespread AAPI hate really is.
As new data is being released about hate crimes, especially in regards to the Asian American community, it shows one out of four Asian Americans said they've experienced a hate incident. Sarah Kehlani Gu is Axios' executive editor. Sarah, this is a joint project from AAPI Data and SurveyMonkey. What is it telling us?
So this survey is one of the first we've seen since the uptick in violence against Asian Americans.
Okay,
and it's showing a clear sense among Asian Americans that 27% of them and 24% of Native Hawaiian Pacific Islanders say they've been a victim of a hate crime.
Holy crap.
Which means they have verbally or physically been abused or experienced property damage because of their race or ethnicity.
Okay, stop for a second. Because this is... First of all, it's hard to have a serious survey that comes from SurveyMonkey. It's hard to take it seriously. But they're a real polling outfit, and they say 27% of Asian Americans and 24% of Hawaiian Pacific Islanders have been victims of a hate crime. I mean, that's pretty serious, right? So, but how does that compare to everyone? Like, how much more of it is that, like, 27% and, like, 1% of white people? How does this compare? Well, they give you the answer in the next sentence.
Pairs with just 22% of the national average of folks saying that they've had this similar incident happen to them.
Okay, so stop. First of all, we're talking about the difference between 24% with Native Hawaiian Pacific Islanders and 22% overall. And the Asian American number was 27%. With smaller groups, these numbers are right near each other. I mean, yes, they're a couple points higher. It's something maybe you could look at, but it's not a massive, massive development, I wouldn't think. So the clip goes on, though, and You hear the word hate crime. Is it possible that 22% of all Americans have experienced a hate crime against them? That seems completely impossible to me. Well, they do describe what the truth is coming up.
But keep in mind, the survey also looked at a wide range of experiences regarding discrimination, with violence or hate crimes on one end and microaggressions on the other.
Okay, stop. Okay, so now we're not at hate crimes anymore. We're down to microaggressions, which basically seems to mean someone says something you don't like. That seems to be the definition. They go in to explain how they themselves, the hosts, have been victims of these microaggression/hate crimes. Listen.
Sarah, both you and I have experienced this personally. I can't tell you how many times in my life someone has asked me, where are you from? And when I say Miami, they say, but where are you really from?
Okay. Now, look, if someone asks you where you're from and you say Miami and they say, no, well, like, where are you really from? Is that racism? Or is it kind of a clumsy way of asking, well, no, what I really mean is, like, what, you know, what's your lineage? You know, like, what's your background? Like, you might say someone who's at a restaurant. You might say you're going out to dinner and they say, you know, I love Italian food. That's my heritage. Oh, really? Well, tell me about your heritage. You might be interested in that. It's one of the things we're told so often we are supposed to care about other people's culture. And then when someone asks about someone else's culture, it's counted in a hate crime survey. Again, someone asking you where you are from is not a hate crime. And even if they mean it in some racist way, is it a hate crime? Maybe it's a microaggression after all. Listen.
Feel for you to see this quantified in an actual survey.
This is something Asian Americans talk about all the time amongst each other, amongst themselves. What it usually implies is, or sometimes more directly asked, at least in my experiences, people being kind of unsatisfied with your answer. So if I say I'm from Southern California, I usually will get, no, where are you really from? And I think when you're asked that constantly and then you realize other people who are white are never really asked that question in an aggressive way, you realize you have this shared experience with other Asian Americans. Doesn't feel great.
Okay, stop for a second. So, again, where are you from? From Southern California. Well, yeah, but, like, what's your heritage? Like, telling me about you live in Southern California, I don't know, I might come from Southern California. Like, that doesn't necessarily, it's not interesting. It's not a different culture. I'm asking you about your background. Where were you from? You know, people would ask me what people have asked me before. What's my background? They ask me because they see my last name, which sounds sort of Franche-Franche, Bulgare. And people say, where is that from? Where's your name from? I don't take it as some microaggression. Let's go to the last clip here, if we could. This is Axios talking about the hate crimes of asking where you're from.
When you add all this up, it's not the one experience or the second experience or the third experience, but the constant experience. I think by and large, I give people a lot of benefit of the doubt that they're very curious. But I also feel like there's so much people don't understand and there's so much that people assume about Asian Americans. And for me, I always think it's interesting because if they're asking about my ancestors coming to America, as some I suspect are, often I'm like, I'm as Chinese as you are Irish. So does that help?
Yes, it helps. We're not saying you're some. Look, I think what really frustrates me about this is this jump to these terrible assumptions about the person you're talking to. Why are you assuming they're doing anything other than just asking? You say here, there's so much that people assume about Asian Americans. Well, how the hell are they going to get the actual information? Because when you ask them, you act as if they're racist for asking. Well, they're going to assume things because you're not telling them anything. You know, I'm from South Carolina. How dare you ask me that question? The bottom line here is this is putting victimization up on this pedestal. And when it's on this pedestal, people strive to achieve it. And that's what this is. You could look at this and say, hey, my friend's asking me about my heritage. My friend's asking me about my family background. Cool, let's talk about it. Or you could say, damn you, you racist. And everyone seems to go that way. She even says she thinks she's giving them the benefit of the doubt. You're doing a major podcast about how your friends are racist. That's not giving them the benefit of the doubt. This will never change. It will never change until we go back to this idea that achievement is the thing that we're striving for and not becoming the victim. This is not a freaking contest to see who can be victimized by their friends in conversation. It needs to be a competition about people expanding their horizons, bettering their lives, bettering the lives of people around them. Acting as if everyone around you has the worst possible intentions every time you talk to them is not a way to make a society better. Ever wonder how free-to-access social media companies make all their cash? Well, they're tracking you, your searches, your video history, everything you click on, and then by selling your valuable data. That's why you need ExpressVPN. When you use ExpressVPN, you anonymize much of your online presence by hiding your IP address. That makes your activity more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN encrypts 100% of your data to protect you from eavesdroppers on your network. And the ExpressVPN app is super easy. You just have to tap one button on your phone or computer, and you're protected. If it was difficult, I couldn't figure it out, but it's not. It finally is time for you to say no to censorship and monitoring and all that crap that goes on online. Take your privacy back with VPNs. From ExpressVPN. This is where I love, this is where I go for my VPN. ExpressVPN.com/Stu. ExpressVPN.com/Stu. By visiting that link, you're going to get 3 extra months of ExpressVPN service for free. It's ExpressVPN.com/Stu. ExpressVPN.com/Stu. As we've gone through the pandemic and dealt with the pandemic economy, one of the things we've tried to do here is talk to small business owners from around the area and the country. We have a small business owner with us now. His name is Pat Gray. Gray, is it?
Gray. Yeah.
Yes.
Gray.
Thank you so much for coming on. Pat Gray.
Sure.
I guess you also host a show, Pat Gray Unleashed.
It is true.
On Blaze TV.
I do. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Much bigger business, perhaps. But you just started this other business.
Right.
I actually wanted to bring you in today. We've obviously, have you on all the time and talking about politics and issues and such, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But we kind of talked about this a little bit off the air one day, and I was kind of fascinated on how all of this came together. Because you own, with your family, a cookie company.
Right.
Keksi Cookies.
Mm-hmm.
KEKSI.com.
you're
as bad as I am with Andrew Cuomo's awful.com.
Yeah.
And you started this during the pandemic.
Right.
First of all, did it cross your mind that it was a bad idea to start a business during the pandemic?
It didn't until we started trying to do it. And then I thought, wait a minute. Maybe this isn't the best time, but we plowed forward anyway. It's actually been pretty good because I think people are denied so many pleasures during the pandemic, mm-hmm. especially last year, that they were like, I'm going to have some cookies and I don't care. I'm going to eat. And obviously I've had the same mentality.
Yes, oh my.
So, so it actually went pretty well last year for, a startup in the middle of a pandemic. And, we did well. We didn't lose money, which was nice.
That's for a first year of any business. That's great.
Yeah.
Take me back, though, before you launched the business. I can vouch that every year your wife would make these amazing cookies and you'd mm-hmm. bring them in and we'd all just say how amazing they are. And we say, you got to sell these things. Come on, you got to sell these things.
Yeah.
And that happens to certain people with certain things that they have at home. No one actually does it, though.
Right.
You decided to actually, let's go for it. Why?
It happens so often from so many different people. And we just realized, there is nobody I've ever met that doesn't love her cookies.
Yeah.
And so we just finally said, all right, let's do it. And so we did it.
So your business plan was
let's do it. That was it.
How much
are you saying that's not a comprehensive, really good as business plan, mission statement kind of thing?
So far as this is going on, I'm losing respect for your business, your business acumen. No, because I think a lot of people think that way, that, hey, we got a great thing that we always enjoy this around the holidays. I bet a lot of people would enjoy this. And it might be true from time to time. But like there's a real thing that I have this myself. There's like an intimidation factor with starting a new business. I have no idea how to do it. Like, I don't know, your wife, you have a lot of overachieving children, which I know are involved in the business. Mm-hmm. So there was, I know they're doing a lot of the hard work
they
on the
are.
Business side.
They're doing the day-to-day operation of it. Our middle son graduated from BYU, Idaho, and in a business degree. And so we kind of sent him to school for this. And so afterwards, we were like, okay, you're ready now, right? And he said, yes. And so we did it.
These are much shorter conversations than I pictured.
Well, we've actually talked to we have a really good friend who's an extremely successful businessman. He just sold one of his businesses for $120 million. Mm. And we talked to him before we started and asked him what was really important. And he said, don't hire family. Don't hire people from your church. And make sure this is all really spelled out in advance ahead of time. And we've done none of those things. We're completely family. And we've hired people from church. And we have no idea what our plan is.
If nothing else, this tells you how good these freaking cookies are.
That's the thing. The product is so good, you can't miss. You just can't.
You've got like this really undisciplined team, but you've got incredible talent. Lots of really fast guys. They catch the ball. It's just amazing. So you're going through and you start the business. Mm-hmm. There's all sorts of weird hurdles. And I think like my level of intimidation when it comes to starting my own business would be, there's so many freaking regulations. There's so much tax stuff. Yeah. I mean, even with food, like there's all the health and safety measures. And I would be terrified that I would screw all that up and be in like prison.
Yeah, that is an important element. Because we had to research all the rules and figure out what we can and can't do. And that's why we built a kitchen, because you can't. Surprisingly, you can't mail things across the country to people that you've just made at home. They frown on that a little bit. Yeah.
Really?
And so we had to have this kitchen built. And, you know, another one of the regulations was anytime you open anything that sells food, you have to have a grease trap. Well, how much grease are we going to have baking cookies?
A grease
trap. Not that much.
Hmm.
But you must have a $35,000 grease trap, no matter what food business you're in. So little things like that have made it really interesting and very expensive.
If you're selling vegetables, you have to have a grease trap.
You have to have a grease trap. Yeah.
It is fascinating. And again, you're talking about opening a business in Texas, which I would assume is a
lot
different.
I would think it's freer.
Yeah, than a lot of other states.
Yeah.
Maybe not the most free, but at least up there, right, in the upper third. And I can't even imagine what it's like trying to do this in New York or California.
Either. It probably would have failed if it was New York, because they'd put so many restrictions on you that you just wouldn't be able to get around them. And they make it cost prohibitive to do it. So it's already expensive enough in a free state like Texas. And there are already enough regulations, like the stupid grease trap, where it does hamper you a little bit. But I can't imagine in Massachusetts or California or New York trying to do this.
So when did you actually open up? Because I remember talking about it on the air when you first kind of said, like, we're gonna do this.
Mm-hmm.
You opened it up initially as sort of, you had local delivery, like in Texas.
Yep.
And then it expanded to a few states. What was the timeline of that?
Well, we opened it to local delivery and that was it for the first couple of months, probably 3 months. And then we opened it up to 9 states. And we did that the rest of last year. We had 9 Western states that we could deliver to. And then toward the end of last year, we started building the kitchen and putting that together. And so ever since that was built, we've been completely nationwide.
And you start off, you're doing local delivery, going well. I remember it was, doing well. And then you decided to basically at some point go all in on this. I mean, like you flippantly say, oh, we're just like, the cookies are great, let's do it. But like that had to be a really hard decision for you.
It was. And the investment of the kitchen probably took every penny we've ever made to actually do. Because I didn't want to go in debt. And I thought taking out a massive loan in the middle of a pandemic was probably a bad idea. So we used our own money and we used pretty much all of it to build this kitchen and make this happen. So please buy some cookies, won't you?
KEKSI.
Really, really important.
Yeah, keksi.com. 100%, you got to do that. Your wife is obviously the brains behind this operation. I mean, what
obviously.
Do you, I know 2 things that you do. Mm-hmm. No, 3 things. One, you talk about it occasionally on your show or on our show.
Uh-huh.
Number 2, You occasionally will show up in a hairnet on an Instagram video, which mm-hmm. I have seen you in a hairnet making, helping to do something with cookies, packaging them or something.
Yeah.
And you definitely write at least some of the web descriptions because
pretty
I keep
much
seeing
all the web descriptions.
I keep seeing communism mentioned in the cookie descriptions. I don't understand why.
And that was a clue that maybe I had like, something to do with it.
Definitely Pat. But she is the brains here, right behind the whole operation.
She comes up with the recipes. She bakes the cookies. Eventually, we're going to train somebody else to be her, and then, you know, she'll go home and not do that anymore, and she'll take care of other things. But, yeah, she is the company, really, to me. Because without her baking prowess, we're not selling any cookies.
It would be hard.
It would be hard.
How do you feel though now? Because you start this in a pandemic year, really hard. Mm-hmm. But you also started during the Trump administration. Donald Trump, pretty friendly to business, certainly, probably something he's best known for.
Yeah.
And then we have an election, and then, you know, a 147-year-old guy wins.
Yep.
He goes in and immediately spends $1.9 trillion. After the $5 trillion we spent in 2020 on the pandemic, he comes in and spends another $1.9 trillion and is promising $4 trillion more. The economy is in a precarious position, and you've got a baby company here.
I'm definitely worried about that because, you know, once he starts taking a lot more money from everybody, that's going to make it tougher to buy things that you don't absolutely have to have. You know, luxury items, it's nice to have cookies, but you don't have to have cookies. So, yeah, that could cut into things. And I was just reading where they've kind of admitted that they're, I can't remember the exact word they used, but sort of reorganizing capitalism, reshaping capitalism.
You saw reshaping. I saw an overhaul of American capitalism. I think the New York Times described it that way.
It's unbelievable.
That used to be, Pat, something they would deny if you accused them of. You'd be a racist if you said they were overhauling capitalism.
Right. But I think they're actually proud of it now.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are just so used to government overreach and government doing so many things, and they've made people dependent on government during this pandemic, that people are accepting it now, and so they're just saying it now. Plus, Glenn made that prediction, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
They're going to take the mask off,
yeah,
literally, mm-hmm. and figuratively, and they're just going to show, yeah, we're socialists, so what? Capitalism didn't work.
Yeah, and now we're talking about the overhaul of American capitalism.
Yeah. You
know, Glenn's had some predictions that, yeah, you know, flamed out a little bit. That one did not.
That one was right on.
That one really did hold up. As you kind of look forward here, we've got Biden. There's nothing we can do about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, after the disaster in Georgia, we've got 50 Democratic senators. Do you think that they will be able to get these plans through? Now, they only need 50 votes for one of them, so they can get one of them through unless they really screw it up. But, I mean, we're talking about $4 trillion of spending. There has to be some limit here, doesn't it?
I really think they're going to use the nuclear option. I'm really afraid of that. And they're doing such a good job of just lying to the American people. I mean, he was running around last week lying about the Georgia bill, like repeatedly, over and over and over. Even, is it the Post that gives the Pinocchios?
Yes.
Washington Post? Mm-hmm. Even WAPO gave him 4 Pinocchios.
Did they really?
On what he was saying about, what he's saying about the new Georgia bill. And he just keeps saying it. He just keeps saying, do you know that they can't give water in line at a vote?
Not sure.
Since when did that become an essential element in American society?
I know.
I have never been given water in line to vote. But anyway, people can give water to you. They just can't be part of the campaigns.
Yeah, they can't be part of the campaign, or they can't be right in line. They have to be 25 feet away from the line. Which, again, is 9 yards, less than 9 yards. It's not that long a walk. They just don't want people bribing, like, hey, pizza party, come vote, get your free pizza.
Essentially paying for your vote.
Exactly, which is an understandable, and it's in the same sentence as money and gifts, right? It's money and gifts, including food and drink. It doesn't even specifically say water, but it says food and drink. I've been thinking about this a little bit lately in this context with a bill like Georgia in particular. In that, you know, there's that saying that everyone always says, perception is reality. And, like, that was a usable and it had some utility to, like, a business, right? Like, mm-hmm. if people think your cookies are great or people think your cookies are bad, even if it's true or not true, there's just a reality that sets in there, right?
Yep.
You know, people would think maybe McDonald's burgers are not real meat, right? And whether it's true or not, it means that people believe the quality is lower, and you have to deal with that as a business owner. Mm-hmm. We've done that now, though, with just facts. Like, the perception now with something like this Georgia bill is it's just designed to stop black people from drinking water. And it's like, well, that's not true at all.
And look how effective they've been. Yeah. They've made many Americans think it's an essential part of our lives to get water when you're waiting in line to vote. Since when has that even been a thing? Who cares if you can get a bottle of water when you're in line to vote? It doesn't matter. That's not an issue. Right. Nobody's ever worried about it. But now, oh my gosh, they want to deprive you of water in line to vote. And
what they said this in, I think it was the New York Times podcast, and they said they want to stop people from being able to get water in the scorching Georgia heat.
It's like
in November. When it's 61 degrees on average. Now, I guess they have primaries, but like, is your idea that they're going to try to suppress the Democratic primary vote? Like, I don't think that would make any sense.
Hard to believe.
For Republicans. All of this just kind of comes down to the same thing, and that like this idea that perception is reality has now taken effect, not just in the vibe of a consumer over some random product, but like in the vibe of like what is news and what is not. Like, if you perceive that's a racist bill, therefore it is a racist bill. Well, what if it isn't? And no one seems to want to deal with that. It's a scary time, because I think we've both been doing this, you know, for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I've always had this internal clock inside of me that is like, all right, at some point we hit that critical mass where enough people know the truth about an issue and the tide will start to turn, you know? I don't think that's a thing anymore. It's not.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
It just stays. The lie just stays in effect.
Yeah. I think they've realized as long as they just keep repeating the same thing, no matter what anybody else says, they have enough cover from the media that they can make it stick.
Yeah.
And they keep doing it.
It really is amazing. Yeah. Pat Gray, very well versed on political issues for a small business owner. That's really impressive. You really do follow up on the news and stuff. It's interesting. Pat Gray, of course, one of the purveyors of the best cookies you're ever going to eat, Kexi.com, Kexi Cookies. Make sure to check it out, KEKSI.com. Mm-hmm. Also, he has another thing he does on the side, Pat Gray Unleashed. You can find it here on YouTube, Blaze TV, podcast, wherever you get them. Make sure you subscribe. And make sure to subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/stew. The promo code is stew. That's how they know you like this stupid show. Plus, you'll save $10 and you get to watch Pat, eat cookies on the air.
That's pretty much what we do on the show.
It's unfortunately what I've been doing way too much of. Pat, thanks for coming on.
Thanks.
All right, back in a second. So Nike has suspended its endorsement of NFL star Deshaun Watson over sexual misconduct allegations. There's 22 women now. Apparently, they didn't think 12 was a big deal, like yesterday, but now there's 22. So they're suspending their endorsement of Watson. This is tough to go through. He deserves due process. Just because you can collect 22 women who say something doesn't mean it's true, though it may very well be true, and he should be held accountable if it is. One interesting aspect of this is that they are trying to say that it's racist, because I guess they didn't, you know, Nike suspended Deshaun Watson's endorsement, and they bailed on Michael Vick when he had his troubles, but they didn't bail on Ben Roethlisberger when he was suspended for 4 games when he was accused of something. Of course, there is somewhat of a difference between 22 women and one. But either way, I mean, it's, you know, I don't think, I mean, would you even want Nike's endorsement at this point with all the crap that they've been doing? And really, you're going to accuse Nike, who's been shoveling multiple millions of dollars into the pockets of Colin Kaepernick just so he can say things are racist? His only job is to just say things are racist, and they're paying him multiple millions of dollars a year. Is Nike really your problem here? Absolutely ridiculous. Back in a second. Trying to buy or sell a home in these times, it can be really challenging. You need a partner in this transaction, and you need a real estate agent that you can trust. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com is the place to go to find that person. You need a Hall of Fame of real estate agents, and that's what Real Estate Agents I Trust is. If you happen to be going through the COVID situation, you've decided to pack up, maybe move somewhere else, get the heck out of California, get the heck out of New York, get the heck out of Illinois or Michigan, wherever you're going, and you're coming to a state that maybe that leans on freedom a little bit, you're going to need to know, first of all, these markets are going crazy right now. A lot of people are doing it. You need to make sure you're getting the best price, and you need to know when it's time to bid higher. You need to know when it's time to get your house on the market and maybe how to stage it, how to fix it up. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com can help you with the entire aspect of this transaction, not just the paperwork, the whole thing. You need a partner. This is a big deal in everybody's financial future, and you need to have the best agent you can get. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com is the place to go. To find that person, it's RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. Hello and welcome to Stu Eats America. My name is Stu, and I'm taking a short break from doing America to eat America. I hadn't planned on a guest for this segment normally because I like to eat in my kind of lonesome solace and you know, really just self-hatred. But Jeffy smelled today's subject and wandered in, so I'd like to welcome to the program Jeff Fisher. Of course, he's the host of Blaze TV and Blaze Radio's Chewing the Fat with Jeff Fisher.
I thought you said anytime.
Any day,
just come on in. So
whenever
here I am.
Whenever you hear food or smell food, just come right in. By the way, don't forget to subscribe to Chewing the Fat with Jeff Fisher on podcast apps or wherever you can find them.
Wherever they are.
Yeah. How's Chewing the Fat going, by the
way? It is fantastic, but I'm suffering through a new campaign that's being done called Lights Out, where we are concerned about migrating birds. And apparently cities all over America are dousing their lights at night because hundreds of millions of birds are flying into buildings. Now, I'm not saying I doubt it, but I don't believe it.
All right, well, I'm sure you've covered this in depth, every angle of the story on Chewing the Fat, but let me ask just questions that popped in my head immediately. It seems to me that if you have a problem with hundreds of millions of birds flying into something, the worst thing you could do
turn
the lights out, because then they won't see it.
It's funny you say
and
that.
They'll bump right
that's
into it.
It's funny you say that, because that's one of the questions I asked.
I thought maybe so. Wait, so what's their answer to this?
So they say that the lights attract the birds. They become disoriented, exhausted, and then fly into the buildings. Now, if I'm a bird, admittedly a large bird, but if I'm a bird,
a flightless bird, most likely, I would say,
and I see a building and I get exhausted and I just get I get confused, don't I land and stop flying?
Don't fly into
don't
the
I
thing.
Fly into things
at some
I
point don't know. You're just a stupid bird.
I mean we've all had birds fly into our windows and stuff. I understand that, and some of the buildings have, you know, trees from their atrium or their, you know, in front of the building, and the birds could fly into the windows thinking they were the trees. I get that, but hundreds of millions, they claim between 350 million and a billion birds die of unnatural causes every year. Now,
because of buildings or because,
well, they throw in there like unnatural causes
like buildings.
Okay. So
the one I've heard a lot about are windmills.
Windmills are killed. Well, that would be an unnatural cause, wouldn't it?
It would.
Yes, it would be. Amazing.
Now, what are
it
we going to do?
Be a building.
That's
and
a left-wing
that.
Priority, though, so they're not going to do anything about
it. It doesn't matter. But they, you know, they still say that cats are the biggest killer of birds. So they say there's all these feral cats running around eating birds.
Let me ask you, there's a billion, right? Is it like 900 million plus cat deaths plus a few?
The stories I read there, that's separate. That's separate. That's the
hundreds
the
of
cat
millions
deaths
of,
are separate from the like building deaths. Now, they claim more than 200,000 birds a year die in New York every year flying into buildings. Now, you and I both worked in the city of New York, Manhattan, to be exact.
Yes.
Now, I don't remember, and maybe I blocked it out of my mind. Uh-huh. I don't remember having to walk over piles of dead birds to get into the buildings that we went into.
I don't either.
I could have forgotten.
And again, you know, you've delved into this. I have another dumb question to ask. New York City is the biggest city in the world. Mm-hmm. Well, not the biggest city in the world, but the biggest city in America and one of the biggest cities in the world. If only 200,000 a year are dying in New York City with all those skyscrapers, how do we get to hundreds of millions in the rest of the world?
It's interesting you asked that question.
I just don't believe
it. Now, they showed a picture of birds they claim died flying into buildings in Chicago and Cleveland. Mm-hmm. There were about a dozen in the picture.
This is just a scare.
I don't
This is like how many straws are in the water.
No.
You know what I mean? They're like, oh, there's a 25 billion straws in the water. Like, where'd you get that stat?
Exactly
what it is. A fourth grader asked once.
And every story has the same, you know, they claim that 365 million to 100. Every story has those numbers.
It's become one of those things.
Yes.
Okay, well, this is Stu Eats America. We're totally sidetracked. I'm fascinated by your issue here. But no, we're going to save birds' lives today and go to Taco Bell. Now, the issue today... This is a big one. This is the brand new Quesalupa. It's returning.
Oh, yeah. With the,
I might do the unboxing here. Ready?
Okay.
Look at this. The brand new.
Oh, man.
There we go. That was less dramatic than you'd think when they're all wrapped. Here's your stupidest sandwiches. Okay, so these are Quesalupas. I want to walk you through the process here, Jeff. Do you want some sauce, too? I know you're a big bougie sauce guy.
I'm not a bougie sauce guy.
Okay. So let me give you what this actually is. Okay. And then we're going to try them. This is brand new. It's back on the menu, brand new. Quesalupa starts with stuffing the crispy chalupa shell with a blend of melted pepper jack and mozzarella cheese from edge to edge. Inside, Taco Bell's signature flavors, including seasoned beef, crispy lettuce, shredded cheddar cheese, fresh diced tomatoes, and cool reduced fat sour cream.
Oh, they've already ruined it.
You're a bougie. You don't want your bougie sauce.
No, I want the reduced fat.
No, yeah. But here's the thing. Now, I just described, it starts with, it's got pepper jack, mozzarella, a bunch of other stuff in there. But they're now saying for its 2021 return, they have put 50% more cheese inside the Quesalupa.
And they're using reduced fat.
And reduced fat. See, that makes it healthy. Now, the Quesalupa, I would say, Jeffy, is a combination of a chalupa, which is this outdoor... This shell here.
Yeah, it looks nice.
Right? The inside shell is a chalupa. But they make it into a quesadilla. So you've got a quesadilla chalupa combination here. I got a black bean variety. Jeffy with the
Are these both the same?
I think they're both the same, yeah. Okay. They just assumed that you would eat two in about 30 seconds. I've already got sour cream all over my hands.
I know.
Let's check it out. This is the brand new Quesalupa from Taco Bell.
All right. Okay. You can definitely tell there's 50% more cheese.
I was going to say 37% more cheese. Maybe I got a bad one.
You got a bad one, yeah.
I will say.
Can't trust the help anymore.
Here's what I would say about this, Jeffy.
Not bad.
It tastes like every other thing that Taco Bell has on their menu. And to me, that is an incredibly positive development. I mean.
It is a good development.
I will. Oh.
You know what you're getting.
Where is the cheese? The cheese. There's some cheese on top, and I guess there's cheese between these two shells. Is that what they're promoting here?
I thought the cheese was in the shells. Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't see it in there. I got no cheese in there. Look at that. Look at that right there. There's no cheese in there.
I have cheese.
Wait, you have cheese in the middle like this?
Yeah.
What the?
Isn't that cheese there?
This is a travesty, a mockery, a travesty, sham mockery.
I think there's cheese there.
Wait, hold on. Let me look at my other one. Does that have cheese in there?
I feel like that's cheese. I mean, I can see it inside here.
I mean, I can see it on the top, but I do not see the cheese. I kind of thought this was supposed to be like a quesadilla, right? This is a travesty.
Still pretty good, though. Got to tell you. Oh, yeah, there's cheese in between.
Right. Where?
In between the shells and in the shell.
Tell me there's cheese between those two shells.
Okay, there's cheese between those two shells, but it doesn't look like it.
What do you think? Your overall, overall impressions here. I would say.
I think your assessment is right.
Right. It's like Taco Bell's food is really good to me. I love it. Mm-hmm. It's like my favorite fast food place. You know what you're getting. It's always good. This is just another, like, there's nothing that would make me go to Taco Bell more to get this. That being said, I want to go to Taco Bell every single day.
Absolutely. And so you throw in some fries. Some Taco Bell hot fries with some cheese sauce. More cheese. Maybe it's the low-fat brand.
I feel like I don't want to eat anything anymore that does not have 50% more cheese.
No.
I've got stuff. I got some napkins over there. Okay, yeah. Good. I've got stuff all over me. I would say.
Oh, man.
This is good. It's not like better than a lot of the stuff on the Taco Bell menu. It's fine.
Yeah.
You know, you're liking it. You seem to be diving in.
I mean, it's not that good.
Would you rather eat that or a bird that hit a skyscraper off of
the
ground?
If there was bird meat in there, I'd continue to eat it. I'll tell you that.
I mean, I don't want to. I know there's a traditional thing of you not giving an actual score. We used to do spoons and do this type of thing all the time. On yes, Stew Eats America, we don't really have a scale, but we can make one up. I mean, you know, 18 was always your top of the line. Is this up there, you think?
I mean,
I don't know.
I think the plan was I would never really give it a rating. Right? Right. I mean, it was always you would give it a rating, and I would say, yeah, it's around there.
That is what happened on every episode.
It's around your rating.
Okay.
Whatever you think it is, yeah, it's around there.
Here's what I'll say. Here's the way I would describe this. I would say, go to Taco Bell, get one of these quesalupas.
Okay? Quesalupas, yeah.
Eat it, but also get like five other things. Eat those things too. This won't be the number one of the five on your list. It'll probably be like number three. It's okay. For Taco Bell, it's okay, which makes it basically one of the best foods on earth.
It may end up being the best for that day, because you're like, ooh, it's new.
Right.
It's new.
You might enjoy it.
Second time through, not going to hit the top. Second time through, it's like, yeah, you know, why don't you throw on that quesalupa too? Yeah, I'll take one of those.
So chewing the fat, people should subscribe there.
Absolutely. Subscribe to any platform that warms the little cockles of your heart.
Mm-hmm. But don't address what he just said. But also, can you get still like chewing the fat mugs and stuff on the website?
Yes.
Yeah.
At the
Blaze Media or something. Go to studosmerch.com. At the top, you'll have all my stupid crap there. At the top, there's a little thing that says, I think, collections. And in there, it has all the host's name. Get Jeffy's name. Get a Jeffy. You got Jeffy's face on a steak. You're telling me you don't want that in your house?
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, Jeffy, thanks so much. Back in a second. So we're getting into the fourth quarter now. It's 22-9. Deshaun Watson leading Andrew Cuomo. By the way, you can get your Andrew Cuomo is Awful mugs and gear all the time at andrewcuomoisawful.com. Also, you can get your Nancy Pelosi sucks pens as well. Here's the pens. Here's the mug. Sorry. Nancy Pelosi sucks pen at studosmerch.com. All the time. Great collection there. I love when you send pictures of yourself wearing this gear or using it. It's always very entertaining to me. So please send it to, you know, you can do it, I guess, at Twitter, Stu Does America, or Instagram. Post some stuff there and tag me. I don't know how any of that stuff works. Just go to the Instagram page. All the links are there on the link in the bio. Before we head out today, there is a new song from a metal band that is, it's Cats. Cats playing heavy metal. Listen. Do we really need to continue this society, honestly? I mean, haven't we had enough of this? Isn't it time to just kind of unplug it? Just turn it off. Give it another whirl, another day. Do we need the Cat Metal Band? Is that what we need? If we do, we can come up with, I think, better names than Katera. We got Black Cat Bath, Iron Meowden, Deep Purple, Nine Inch Claws, Hairballin' Manson, Fuzzy Osbourne, Alice Pooper Scooper.
Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche, auch bei den Johnsons, oder Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil.